In the gilded palaces of Rome, power had a price, and desire was the weapon of choice. There was an empress who ran her own brothel. There was another who married her uncle and then poisoned him. One bathed in donkey milk, and another stabbed a severed tongue with a hairpin. Yep, those things really happened. They ruled through seduction, fear, and poison, until the people of Rome decided they'd gone too far. Who were these women? Were they monsters? Were they victims? Or the most dangerous survivors in history? This is the story of a few incredible and terrifying Roman women and how scandals built empires. Well, have we got an episode for you, Ant? This is the Roman women. Now, it's unfair of us, maybe, some would say, to put a whole lot of Roman women into one episode, but there are so many, we may run out of time here for all of them. But the reason we think that they deserve an episode just for them is because we did worst emperors, best emperors. Now it's time for the ladies to have some spotlight. We'll see if they want it or not by the end of the episode.
Yeah, no, definitely. I loved preparing for this. You stumble on it as you actually go through the history of Rome. And you might have highlighted it a bit earlier. So often it's the men that tell the stories, and that's the stories that are told through the ages.
Yeah, feminists would say history, so not herstory. Exactly. So we've done blind herstory, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. But this is definitely a case, and often it's also the opposition that writes about them.
Oh yeah.
So they do get a bum deal, but I think that there's no doubt that the women of ancient Rome were really, in a lot of ways in charge of the direction that Rome took.
There's some powerful, powerful women in the story. So I do think we must get into it because people want to know who we're talking about. And there's almost 1,000 years of Roman history that we can delve into here. But why don't we start with someone who represents the best of Roman matronly, motherly, female honor, the kind of woman who Romans aspired to be and to have their own family be.
Yeah, so I think that the Cornelia is case in point. She actually wrote a book about it. Well, I don't know what you'd call it in those days, but so that people could understand, how to be this virtuous Roman woman. But however, I have to also say that they're few and far between, Truth be told, I mean, you have to look quite hard.
Again, let's start with a good one, and then we can steadily. And I think your exact words were, well, they fall off a cliff quite precipitously after that. But Cornelia Africana, this is about 190 BC. So we're talking about 200 years before the fall of the Republic, Julius Caesar, Augustus, all of those cataclysmic events. This is a proper Republican matron. So she was the mother of who?
So Cornelia was the daughter of Scipio Africanus.
Oh, wow. The great Roman general
who actually took down Hannibal. And, we've covered Hannibal before. And Hannibal nearly actually, way before his, 300 years before the fall of the empire, he nearly had Rome. But and this is the daughter. So he was one of the greatest Romans, and still today of all time. And so she was brought up by that strict disciplinarian. What he's like in terms of what he achieved. So yes, she was a paragon of virtue.
And the mother of famous kids, right?
Because the Gracchi kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Apologies, sorry.
So who are the Gracchi?
So the Gracchi kids, if we try to explain, if we could sort of more, you had the plebeians, so those were and there was a lot
the ordinary
of
ordinary folk.
The ordinary folk, everybody goes around, but nobody really cared about them. the aristocracy was
the patricians,
as they were called. They were foremost, everything was about them and how they can maximize their wealth, maximize their position, power. Right. So Rome is a lot about power.
And at that stage, you couldn't be a senator unless you came from the patrician class.
Correct.
So the plebs were relegated to, certain magisterial offices. Then there was the tribune of the plebs, which was a specific role created later for them. But really, the plebs were kind of ignored, as you
said. Yeah, they were
100%
ignored.
Just ordinary citizens.
But so that's why when we look at Cornelia, because, you know, the mother, and often the mother, if you think about, they're really heavily involved in bringing up their children, because often there's absent fathers. Mm. It's either fighting battles or whatever it might be. So so she played a big role in the Gracchus, and both of them.
Tiberius and Gaius.
Yes, and both of them were very, I mean, what they tried to do, and I mean, they actually were very, very good for trying to drive the rights of the plebeians at the time. And so it's almost like a human rights activist today.
Yeah, sure.
In some way.
Populist reformers, you could call them all those things. But why was she so special? Was there an offer? I heard that there was an offer of her marrying royalty, and she turned it down because this was the Egyptian royal family, and she said, no, I'm a Roman. We don't do that.
And she never wanted to get remarried. Mm. So she was, you know, there was no problem about getting remarried. So her husband died.
Gracchus.
He died quite early. And she just she refused. And you're correct in what you say in terms of this marriage proposal for her. But she concentrated. So her whole being was about making her children the best that they can possibly be, and everything around that, and so in other words, they will hold their name in lights, and effectively she would be the mom, and that's as far as they would go in terms of highlighting her, what her role was, but she was very happy with that.
How much of what we know about her is actually true, and how much of it was invented by later Romans who were looking for an ideal of what a mom and a Romanly motherly family matriarch would be?
Yeah, so she wrote about it. So,
okay. In her own words,
she wrote about it. And I suppose, like many things, I mean, Gareth, this is a long, long, long time ago. So a lot of the writings, unfortunately, unpredictably lost. I mean, but we do know a lot about the Gracchi's, mm-hmm. and the Gracchi's and how they spoke about their mother.
Right.
So we get quite a few different views of who she really was, and in this instance here, you can't paint any picture but a positive one of Cornelia and what she stood for.
All right, so we've got Cornelia Africana, great Roman woman, but then just 200 years later, it all goes to absolute shit because we start off with. And you know, there are still good Roman women around, I've got to say, you know, women like Caesar's first wife, like Augustus's first wife, but they start getting a bit dodgy. I mean, there's Livia, the second wife of Augustus, yes. The mother of Tiberius,
yeah.
Through a previous marriage. And Livia, while she's regarded very highly, in her own family is not considered a paragon at all. Mm. She, first of all, is... She has such a performer's grace in front of any and everybody who would come into her presence that you almost think she's subhuman or superhuman. She never cried. She never laughed. She was stoic as hell. She never, ever gave any indication of what her real emotions were. She's been accused by historians much, much later after her death of being a poisoner, that she poisoned every single rival Tiberius ever had to become emperor in Augustus's lifetime, that she even poisoned him by putting poison on the figs on the tree so that if he was eating figs, the ones that were put on a dish in front of him, you know, there's a chance they'd be poisoned. So he went and picked them off the tree. But she apparently, again, you know, you got Tacitus and Suetonius and Cassius Dio, who all say that she was an evil woman. Apparently so evil, and this part we know is true, that Tiberius, her son, wanted nothing to do with her during the start of his reign and the first few years there. And when she died, he refused to go to her funeral, refused to deify her, and said she was an absolute tyrant in his own memoirs. So if your own kid is saying that, there may be some suspicion.
Yeah, so I think that she was 100% devoted to Octavian, Augustus.
Mm-hmm.
And everything she did, so she actually set the rule book for how to be an empress.
Yeah.
So, and when you talked about She never let out her emotions.
Yeah.
She kept within social boundaries. We'll see some of the nutters that in around that area who were very au fait with using poison. And you know that in the court, as we'd call later, in later years, they would have special poison experts within the court. But it's quite hard to see as conniving. The reason being, I think, is because the fact that Tiberius disowned her, but she was working so hard behind the scenes apparently and poisoned Augustus to get Tiberius onto the front foot and to become the next emperor, it doesn't fit.
Yeah, so, I mean, in her defense, she may have been cold and calculating, perhaps to reference what you just said now, she was devoted to Augustus. Maybe she was devoted to power, but a lot of the criticism of her comes from many years later, and the record shows that she was an absolutely upright human being, and certainly, as you say, defined the role of empress, made sure that the court ran smoothly, and of course had quite a lot to do with the wielding of power. You know, when Augustus was away on campaign, for example, she took care of things.
Yeah, and when Augustus passed away, finally, she was the most powerful woman in Rome.
Yeah, by
so,
far.
Yeah, so she was until obviously Tiberius was fed up with her in the end. but she passed away, I think, in relative peace.
Yeah, I think she lived to an advanced age. Yeah,
yeah, I think she had a. You know, I think this is, let's say, whetting an appetite of troublesome women. But I think that Augustus played his part well, his role well. As he says, did I play my part well? She played her part.
Absolutely.
They were such a great couple.
Yeah.
And she did, Gareth, she got involved a lot in politics at the time with Augustus because she was so close to him. And he was so in love with her. Every day he would... you know, make sure that he reported back on what was happening and plan feeding back to her about what was going on. So he was really, really in love with her.
You could almost call them a power couple.
A power couple, 100%. Right. So it's a 2,300 year or 2,100 year power couple.
Yeah.
You know, I think that and yes, poisoning, it was rife at the time, but I don't, it's my opinion gained from a lot of the books I've read, and material I've read, I think she was a little bit treated unfairly because it was from the other side of the fence.
Right. Okay, well, you defend her. I'm trying to do the devil's advocate argument. I also think Livia was pretty damn good. Let's do another example, and let's give people some insight into the wife of Mark Antony. Of course, the first wife of Mark Antony, because he later on married Octavia, who was Augustus's younger sister. Don't worry if you're not keeping up with the family trees here. It gets even more complicated. You'll have to draw a diagram. And then his third marriage, of course, is to Cleopatra.
Yes.
But the first wife, Fulvia, doesn't get her just desserts. And I think she was quite an imposing and powerful and phenomenal woman.
So let's just say on the Mark Antony side, so his reputation lay in tatters. After the, you know, Octavian was a great becoming Augustus. He was a great propagandist. And, propagandist. And what she did, he was gone. He was in Greece at the time, sadly, philandering as he did. And he was with a Greek lady, woman, and then he ended up with Cleopatra. But she was, in the meantime, fighting for him. And she would go to senators almost on her knees, begging for forgiveness from Mark Antony until she laid the path clear for him to actually return to Rome. So she did an incredible job, even with Augustus. But she was a great lobbyist, and I think that a lot of the Roman, the patrician Roman woman, their key strength was lobbying.
Mm.
But if we look, we take a few steps back on Fulvia and. She was married to a very, very well-to-do Clodia Pulcher, and he was really up there and he was going places. And he was murdered, brutally murdered, by one of his big opposition. He was beaten in the street, murdered on the streets. So normally what would happen then, the wife would take control of it, remove the body from the street, and within her own time clean the body and take the body to and once it's all done in that, they would have a public funeral, and then they would burn in the where they'd stack everything up, and I think it's
pyre.
So but what happened in this instance, the minute she found him lying on the street, brutally murdered on the street, she got everybody together. She created such massive populist movement. So everyone on the street saw this, and it was just so wrong. And they carried him to the forum area, and they burnt him, and they burnt the forum down. You know, that was where, that's 500 year old building. They burnt down with his body, and then they went to court. So this is her. This is everything to do with Vulvia. Mm-hmm. They went to court, and even Cicero, who greatest orator, greatest legal mind. We talk about him in 2025.
Sure.
And he was too scared, because he was too scared to upset this great force that was outside. They wanted justice from this gentleman's name was Milo, or whatever you want to call him. He was his big enemy. And in the end, he was taken out. But
well, she gets her revenge on Cicero a little later, which we'll talk about.
Yes.
And again, you underestimate these women at your peril. You think they're just wives and mothers and quietly dignified and graceful going about their business, but they're actually real political players. And Cicero found that out the hard way.
Yeah, he did find out the hard way. But he was such an opponent of Clodia, the husband that was murdered, and he was such an opponent of Vulvia. And in those days, there weren't strict rules around how far you can go. So you could make mention of something and just make mention without any true facts. And people would sort of go with it. So he destroyed the reputation. And I think they got very, very excited at the opportunity, finally, Mark Antony particularly, and Vulvia for that matter, to actually, he was on the prescription list.
Right.
And they rubbed their hands. Drew up.
Yeah. So this is further on in the story. So after she'd buried, created chaos in Rome, virtually burnt down the forum, and put her own first husband to rest, then she marries Mark Antony?
No, so there was a great friend of Clodius that she married next. So she was married three times. And his name was Curio. But he wasn't as...
Is that... Flex, did we get that? Or is that all right? Okay, yeah, let's just... great friend?
Yeah, so Curio was the second husband and a great friend of Clodia and a big supporter, but also a big supporter of Julius Caesar and the Julian clan. So again, draw the line with Cicero. But so that's the second husband. So she must know how wealthy she was by now, mm-hmm. because she had inherited the estate of mm-hmm. Clodia, and he also then passed away. He passed away normally, but ultimately, so then she was again a widow. And in between that period, then she met Mark Antony. So she was a powerful woman. Mark Antony, he wanted to be Augustus. He wanted to be the next emperor of Rome. And there was opportunity. He was very, very angry when Julius Caesar nominated his nephew mm-hmm. to become, which is Octavian / Augustus. But he wasn't going to give up on this. So he was fighting very hard, actually, through war to take what he believed would be the rightful place. And at that time, he got married to Vulvia. So she was I'm not going to say power hungry, but she was at the right place.
And he married her for the right reasons if he was on the political ascent.
Correct.
So
and she was very wealthy. And you know, he was flagrant with money. He had no control.
Yeah.
I think one of his biggest vices, alcohol, there was no chance of him ever being faithful to five women, maybe. You know, he was a different person. I remember seeing the show on I think you call it Rome,
where HBO,
the first person we see, the first time we see Mark Antony is when he's up against a tree and he's got somebody in front of him. So he needed Vulvia just to tighten the reins.
Now, I believe she was also the first Roman woman and the only one to ever command an army and one of the few Roman women to have minted coins with her face on.
Yes, correct. And I think that what happens here is, Mark Antony is a weak leader. So he might have been a great general under great men. Mm-hmm. But he's a weak leader.
Right.
And she was tired of waiting for him. So she said, you know what, the writing's on the wall. Octavian's taking this place. So we need to fight. So she got Mark Antony's brother, and the both of them went in they lost the battle, and effectively she was finished. But
she did confront Cicero in the Senate. She went in full regalia and took him on and put on a very good argument. Remember, if you were a woman, you weren't considered of sufficient stature to argue with a senator, particularly not a senator who was as verbally intelligent as Cicero is supposed to have been. But she was fearless and went in there and basically told him off in no uncertain terms. He never forgot that, neither did she.
Yeah, and I think so. This is a little bit. The story is, for me, gets a little bit sad here. Is that she was insanely powerful, and she did the right things, but in the end, she married Mark Antony, and she fought that battle. She fought the war. He said, "I have nothing to do with the war." So the little bit of yellow streak coming through him, mm-hmm. and then when she lost to Augustus. She fled, obviously she had to.
Yeah.
And she went to Greece, and he was busy shacking up with Cleopatra at the time. So, and then she died. So it's a little bit of a sad ending, but this is really, she wasn't going to back down from anybody right throughout her life.
Clearly.
Yeah. And so Vulvia is somebody I really like. I think that there's a famous painting of her where she's lying almost seductively, but with I don't know, Gareth, how you call the expression, but it's almost of an evil look, mm-hmm. and she's got the head of Cicero next to her, which apparently that's what happened.
Well, when they cut off Cicero's head, and this is the kind of full circle end of the story, they presented it to Mark Antony and to her, and she took a hairpin out of her hair and stuck it through the tongue. And said, "That's the last time you'll insult me."
Yeah, and that's the painting. Am I right? I think that's what the painting was about.
Okay, so she. I mean, she's also. You could argue that she was maybe a tough woman in tough times, but I don't think you could say she was necessarily bad. I'm going to skip ahead because there's Julia the Elder, Augustus's daughter, who was a renowned sex fiend. She was behaving so badly in the streets of Rome and offering herself up to just about any man who she could. And eventually Augustus, who'd made rules about morality, said, "This is not happening on my watch." And you can imagine how hard it would be. Only daughter, not with Livia, who we discussed earlier, but his only daughter, his only real descendant. And he had her banished to an island called Pandateria. And she died there. I mean, you can imagine how hard that was but
tough.
It shows you what kind of people Augustus and Livia must have been. There's Agrippina the Younger, who was the mother of Nero, the sister of Caligula, and she married her own uncle. We won't get into the family dynamics of this, but incest was a game everyone could play in ancient Rome.
So just getting back to Livia, you know, it's Augustus' daughter.
Julia.
Julia. She actually, and what I like about it a lot is that Julius Caesar was still, his name still ran through.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, I was Julius Caesar. So I like that. But Julia, she started out actually giving it a good college try.
Yeah.
And I think she
married Agrippa.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, and I hope we cover him one day. He was one of the greatest generals.
Absolutely.
You know, he's. I don't think his names have been highlighted as much as a Hannibal or a Scipio Africanus. But so Agrippa, and that's when we talk about Agrippina the Younger. I think that's there's a lot of strength in her. But but Julia, just getting back to Julia, and in the end, I think she had such a torrid time playing the right game that. She just was fed up. And then the overpowering of her dad and mom were, it was just too much for her. And I think she just rebelled. She ended up, she was promiscuous. And it was, you can just imagine Augustus and Livia, how they struggled with that because the Stoic, you know, they, mm-hmm. they everything is it's got to be by the book. We've put a whole lot of things in place, da da da, and so they banished it. I mean, that's just traumatizing.
Horrific.
The only thing I can say is we didn't live in that era, so we don't exactly know what, you know, how it played out.
All I can tell you is that Pandateria, this island, was just a rocky outcrop. There was no food. You couldn't find water. So you starved and you would die of thirst.
Yeah, so it was
That's
just
all
bird shit and
it's horrific.
Yeah.
And then they would go and fetch her body like 2 months later and then go and bury it somewhere.
Yeah.
But not great. I want to skip ahead though, because there's a woman who I find particularly interesting because she's probably the most, let's say she has the most unenviable reputation in ancient Rome, Messalina. So this is the wife of Emperor Claudius. If you've ever seen the series I, Claudius, I mean, that kind of exaggerates things, but this is what the historians wrote down. So Claudius's wife, Messalina, was about 28 when she died, but man, did she fill those 28 years with debauchery and treachery. So we can get to the salacious parts, because I think that's what people have come for in this episode. She competed with a prostitute to see who could sleep with more men in one night, and Messalina made sure she won. She apparently had a voracious sexual appetite. Claudius was by that stage probably double her age. He was an old man in a family that had hardly done well in the genetic component of their contribution to ancient Rome. And I suppose she was bored a lot of the time. She wasn't really allowed to make important decisions with regard to the state. And she was a pretty young girl, but clearly had appetites.
Yeah, so I don't know Are you aware who won that competition?
She did.
She won the competition.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So they got the biggest whore in Rome, who was a famous woman, who had slept with, she reckons, close to 500 men. And Messalina said to her, ha, keep them coming. Let's go. And there were senators, and there were plebs, and there were slaves, and there were all kinds of people involved. And Messalina was not tired out. I mean, the famous whore eventually left the room saying, I can't keep up with that.
Yeah, so I think it was like 25 partners or something.
It was way more than that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow, I mean, that's just insane.
But in one sitting.
So, yeah, I think that's it's impressive even in today's standards. It's but you know she was just so put off by Claudius. You know, if you see Claudius and his demeanor and his behavior, Messalina was just too hot to handle.
Maybe we've got to be fair here and give her a little bit of credit. Claudius had a limp. He had a stutter. He would drool. He couldn't speak properly because he clearly had all kinds of impediments.
Yeah.
And he'd been bullied. I mean, he'd watched half his family get taken out violently in front of his very eyes. He was there when they killed Caligula.
Hiding behind the curtain.
Hiding behind the curtain. And the Praetorian guards pulled him out and said, "Hail Emperor Claudius." And he went, B-b-b-b-b-b-b-b-b-b-b. So anyway, the guy didn't have an easy time, but probably wasn't the most affectionate lover either. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think that he just so happened to marry Messalina, who was just completely the opposite side. And, you know, where she proves that she didn't really she proved what she wanted to do. She wanted to overthrow Claudius. And she, in the end, with her last lover, she actually gave it a good college try as well.
She did. She married him. I mean, this is the guy. His name was Silius, actually. She married this man while she was still married to Claudius, and he was out checking the port of Ostia or something, and she married this guy, and then word got back to Claudius that this was going on, so he said, no good, I'm going to send the Praetorians to get her, and apparently they cornered her in a garden, and they murdered her in the garden, and Claudius just carried on eating lunch. He was like, well, all's well that ends well.
You're on somebody listening to you would say, land the plane, Claudia.
but she wasn't great.
But they removed her. So you know that, and often did it, you'll see, I mean, we've spoken a lot about how messy it gets with the type of emperors.
Yeah.
And it just really gets messy later on in the Roman Empire as it starts falling apart. And they could have done a lot worse than Julius Caesar and Augustus, to be very honest.
Correct.
But as punishment, her name was removed from everywhere. I mean, she was one of the most powerful women in Rome.
Right.
All monuments, honors, whatever she might have been mentioned.
Very hard to find a statue of her, let's put it that
exactly,
way.
Exactly, 100%.
Right. Yeah, they would deface anything that had her name on it. And if essentially try to erase you from history, which is what they tried to do. So, you know, 28 years filled with sexual excess, political manipulation. She's done pretty well there. Honorable mentions. I think it's worth mentioning Poppaea Sabina, the wife of Nero, who bathed in donkey milk. Apparently, she needed 300 donkeys in her retinue just to keep her looking pretty. She possibly died after she was kicked in the belly by Nero while pregnant with his child. So,
yeah, that was just that, and that is probably true.
Delightful behavior from Nero. She was deified after death, so obviously he felt pretty guilty after that and decided to make her a goddess, built her a golden shrine, sobbed uncontrollably for days. Well, maybe you shouldn't have kicked her, dude. And encouraged Nero, while she was still alive, to murder his own mother, Agrippina, and his then-wife, Octavia.
So Agrippina the Younger, and you delved a little bit on Agrippina the Younger, but so again, from the line of Agrippa and also from Augustus, and she wrote the book of A Troublesome Woman.
Oh, yeah. Also died on an island.
She was also excommunicated, whatever you like, and using poison.
But hang on, because didn't Nero also try to kill her? He built a boat.
Correct.
And she was on the boat, and then he told his guards to sink the boat. But this mother of his, unstoppable, managed to swim to shore and walked in as if nothing had happened, pretended she didn't know about his attempt to murder her. So he was horrified.
You couldn't kill her, but she used, you know, the poison. This is where I heard that in the court, they didn't call it the court in Roman times, but they had what they would call a locusta or a lobster. And that was the person that was in the fine arts of poisoning people. So you had a slow poison or a quick poison. Right. And you know, that's how women would do certain things to create power for themselves or to move people out the way for their son, et cetera, et cetera. And that's because she was everything about getting Nero on the throne. And then what did he do, you know?
Yeah, he took her out.
Yeah, he took her out.
But apparently the worst, the coup de grace then, was when Nero's guards were sent to kill her, finally. And she saw them coming and had their swords bared. And she said, "Stab me in the stomach that gave birth to Nero." That's where she wanted to be put down, essentially. Yeah. Any others that you want to mention as we wrap this one up?
So I really enjoyed Theodora. So that's quite a lot. That's quite a lot ahead. And
Theodora was the wife of Justinian. Who was technically a Byzantine or Eastern Roman emperor. He briefly reunited Rome. He was the famous author of the Codex, the laws. He was based in Constantinople. And Theodora was his wife. Now, what makes her interesting to you?
So what makes her interesting? So I think this is actually, we could be termed a love story, but just a rags to riches.
Yeah.
So in those days, they had these acts. It was almost like a circus act where she would dance seductively.
Uh-huh.
And
strippers.
Yeah. So it's basically strippers, but they would actually have sex on stage as well.
Oh. So more than strippers.
So it was a touch more than strippers. So, but she would do that, and Justinian fell head over heels in love with her. And you must look at this as a power couple. These guys were just so Theodora and Justinian were such an insane couple, and she was very strong. They tried to overthrow him so they had the green and the blue team in the chariot races.
Right.
There was that big uprising, and she, with the strength of her personality and character, she actually quelled that. So she, in her own right, she was an incredible empress and a very, very strong woman. So that's somebody that I've always enjoyed reading about her.
Well, you know what? I trusted you to hoist the flag of Rome high, start with a strong woman, end with a strong woman, a couple of lunatics in between. Roman women. And by the way, for anybody who's upset because we've left out some of these ladies, we may have to do a follow-up episode, but we've barely scratched the surface of crazy and dangerous and delightfully eccentric Roman women. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Blind History returns with a new episode next week.